Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to a Blog Radio Show. On tonight's show, we feature Larry Tablin, lead vocalist, keyboard player, and founder of the Standells. Their song, Dirty Water, was named one of the songs that defined and shaped rock and roll. Join the conversation. Call 646-478-0999. That's 646-478-0999. And let's see if we can connect with Joanne Barton, your host. Joanne.
Hey, everybody.
Are you there,
hey,
Joanne?
John. How are you? Hi, John. How are you?
Can you hear me tonight?
I surely can. How are you?
Oh, that's good. Good. Because our last tech guy that was helping me out, he was actually called away to do another practice session for the next debate coming up because he did such
a good job
on the first one.
Yes, I know. I heard about that. Well, let me just say, I'd like to welcome fans to the Applause Radio Show, sponsored by KWE Wines. It's the show that gets you one step closer to your favorite celebrities. Tonight, we have the talented Larry Tablin of the Standells. And I believe he's on the line now. Larry, are you with us?
Yes, I think I am.
Hey, Larry, welcome to the show.
Hey, Larry.
Well, thank you. Just a pleasure to be with you. I realize that you're coming from New York, right?
Yes, yes. We actually have two studios. We have one in New Jersey and one in Philadelphia. So John's in Philadelphia, and I'm in New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
I
love that whole area. I've got history in Philadelphia, New York, New Jersey. So I just love that entire area.
Well, it's funny, John. I have to, Larry, I'm sorry. John Arricchio is our sound tech guy and my co-host, and he jumps in on occasion to ask some wonderful questions because you two actually have something in common. But I wanted to mention that Dirty Water, when it played over here on the old WPLJ way back when PLJ was rock, and 102.7 when that was rock, whenever they played it, they replaced Boston with New York. So exactly. And it's funny.
How do you get around the dirty water?
Well, in New York, it's very hard. But I also found it quite amazing that you're not even from Boston area, and you had a hit with this song, which is like a Boston anthem. And now they play it at all the sports shows. I mean, they're playing at the Boston Red Sox games, the Bruins games. I mean, I know it was written by, what's his name? Oh, my goodness.
Ed Cobb.
Right, right. And he was from Boston, right? Tell us the story behind
that.
No.
Ed is actually from Los Angeles. Like,
oh, okay.
He supposedly, we never got the personal story for him, but he supposedly was in Boston with the Four Preps doing a concert there, and he got mugged, according to the story I heard.
Welcome
and,
to Boston.
Right along the Charles River there, and so he decided to write the song. Now, when you say he wrote it, the Standells participated highly in the writing
of
it.
Of course.
when he presented the song to us, it wasn't near, you know, what you hear on the radio. We added the guitar lick, all the improvisation. I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to tell you about my town, you know, and
right,
all that
right.
stuff. We added into it some of the different different type of chord changes rather than the standard blues. We did it all. And interestingly enough, when the record came out on the label, a guy that wasn't even there was credited with doing the arrangement on the song.
I saw that. That's crazy. I know.
Yeah. And Lincoln Mayorga, who I really admire, he's just one of the great conductors, composers, you know, and he admits that he was. He never even stepped foot in the studio, but he was a buddy of Ed Cobb's. And this is one of Ed Cobb's quirks, is he included his friends a lot in what he did.
Right, right. Well, I have to ask you another question about Dick Dodd. I mean, I, unfortunately, he's passed away in 2013, your
sure.
drummer. Why do you think he kept popping in and out of the group?
You know,
it seems like he was there for the high times, and then when things got to the low times, that's when he left. He'd come back
well,
with the high.
Yeah, I cover that a lot in my book.
I want to talk about your book.
I have an autobiography, which I've just finished. It's onto the editor. But
excellent.
I talk a lot about Dick, and it was complicated in that, yeah, he was there during the high times, and the low times he was gone, and it happened at least 4 or 5 times, even in later years. I brought him back into the group, and he was out again. So it's hard to tell with people. Dick was a great guy. He was a great performer, and he was wonderful to work with in the early days. And, unfortunately, like many musicians, he got into drugs and alcohol, and it wore on his life. And,
it usually does with
everybody. And, unfortunately it took Dick, and, I pay high tribute to him, to his talents, to his wonderful voice, but I also give credit to Ed Cobb for bringing that performance out of him. That's not normally the way Dick sounded. If you ever heard any of our live performances, he didn't sound at all like that. That nasally, gritty, in your face sound was really, I think, I attribute to Ed Cobb.
Wow. And you know, you guys were like considered like the first punk group, and we're talking the 60s, and punk wasn't even really known yet. So, the unforgettable raunchy riff of the beginning of Dirty Water is just, it's unforgettable. I mean, as soon as you hear it, you know the song. It's just like,
well, I got to tell you a story about that. First of all, you're right. There was no such thing as garage rock or punk rock back then. It was just rock and roll. And
right.
We had our own particular sound, much akin to other groups like Sky Saxon and the Seeds. And a good friend of mine, Jimmy Soane's The Shadows of Night, to Gloria. And we all had a particular sound. Eventually, it wasn't until the late 80s or 90s that it was deemed garage rock. At first, it was called punk rock.
That
branched off. So we were originally called the Godfathers of Punk Rock, and then it was changed to Garage Punk, which is fine with me. I mean, I really like that, and I liked I like that kind of distinction. I like we've also been called frat rock, which I hate. I hate the term. And I don't know where that came from. I never did a fraternity. We never did a fraternity. And
right.
I can't see myself running around in a toga, at least.
Well, next time you go to tell us a story, you got to start with, I'm going to tell you a story. But what else did I want to ask you? In regards to your the book, the autobiography, I can't wait to read it. I mean, I can only imagine. I mean, you were in the heyday of music, the birth of music with the 50s and 60s with rock, and I mean, the experiences you must have had, and, you know, and my God, I don't even want to ask you how old you are, but I know I was only 4 when Dirty Water came out, but I remember.
I am proud to say I'm 76 years old.
God bless you. Oh, my.
Yeah.
And still touring. And
Yeah, I don't feel like I'm 74. I feel like I'm 34. And yeah, I exercise. I take good care of my health and diet and everything. And so
right.
I figure I have, you know, quite a few years left.
I think you do. Yeah, I think you
and,
do.
And regarding the autobiography, it's been on the back burner for many years.
How do you put all that into a book? You know, you've got so much to say. You know.
You go from A to Z.
Right.
I start in my book. I start off with the biggest highlights is performing at the 2004 World Series Game 2. And then, in the exhilarating feeling we had, you know, it was all the original members back together for the first time in a number of years. And then I go all the way back, to my childhood and then on forward. And some of the insane experiences I had both as a child and with the Standells, people will think they're fiction. They're not. They're true stories. And there's a gazillion of them. And, you know, the interesting thing, Joanne, is when you start writing this thing, it's very cathartic in that you're bringing out feelings that have either been deeply buried or forgotten about, or things that you don't want to relive. And it really forces you to deal with them. And fortunately, I've got the years of experience, behind me, so I can look at them differently and more objectively. And that's what it's all about. So
absolutely.
In writing this, I try to be as honest as I can. And I try to be, as accurate as I can. And I've had to go back numbers of times and change dates of things that happened because, after 57 years, your memory isn't quite clear,
You wish you would have known you were going to live to be 76 and older so that you could have wrote this stuff down then and you wouldn't have to say, oh, God, what happened then?
That comes under the woulda, shoulda, coulda category.
Exactly, right. Oh,
but
my goodness.
When
do you think the book will be released?
It depends on, when they, I have a literary agent, a really good literary agent that's working on it. And he's handled a lot of these kind of books. And so it depends on who, what publisher he gets how long it takes to print them, whether it goes immediately on e-books, that sort of thing. But I hope to have it out by the end of the year.
Oh, wow, that's great. I can't wait to catch it. I really can't. Yes.
I have a question for Larry.
Yeah, I can barely hear John.
Yeah, John, you got to speak up because...
Okay, can you hear me now, Larry? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, hey, Larry, how did you wind up on the Munsters?
That was my question.
I remember that
episode.
And the interesting thing is that and the Bing Crosby show and several others were done before we ever had a hit record. I got to be honest that Seymour Hiller, who was part of the management firm that managed us, had a lot of ties in Hollywood. And at that time, they were looking for, an American group that would kind of come close to the Beatles. I mean, the Beatles were the rage. I got to be honest, they're gods and the rest of us are somewhere beneath that. But they were looking for a group and especially a fairly good looking group.
Yourself, of course, a good looking guy.
Well, according to them. Okay. So we fortunately got picked on a few of these shows and acted in them. And, you know, I had a little bit of acting experience when I was a child.
Well, you also have acting in your family, don't you?
Yeah, and acting comes to my family, too. My eldest brother, Russ Tamblyn, and my niece, Amber Tamblyn, sisterhood of the Traveling Pants.
Cool.
She's a big movie producer. She's written, you know, multi-books now, books of poetry, and she's got several different fictional books out.
Nice, nice. Good for her.
And she's surpassed me by far. She's still young.
Well, we always want our children to do better than us, right? So.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it kind of runs in the family, and, you know, and I picked up on that right away. I had most of the acting lines in the Munsters, so
it was
fun. A very good friend of mine was Eddie Munster in the Butch Patrick.
Oh, Butch Patrick,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and we often reminisce about that. One of my favorite stories is the scene in the Munsters where I'm sitting there eating a banana, talking to the guy that played our manager and that. And for some reason, I just couldn't coordinate the freaking banana with speaking. and it got worse and worse instead of better, you know. I was sticking the thing in my nose, and it was just awful. But I finally got through it, but in the process, consumed about a half a dozen bananas, and I was so fucking sick that night.
I bet that you're all bananaed out. No Chiquita commercials for you.
Chiquita, no yellow banana, nothing like that.
Well, I actually remember that episode, and I mean, I watched all those shows, and that's pretty much what our show is about, trying to get people on the show from yesterday that we love so much and we can't get out of our heads. And, you know, you guys, it's just a soundtrack and a film track to our lives, and we can't forget it. That's why we love having you on the show. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it. You know, the Munsters was really, that episode was the most popular of the Munsters series.
I bet it was, yeah.
Just because of us, and it was so much fun to do, and it was so much fun to work with
Fred Gwynn, great Yvonne show,
and Carlo.
Yeah.
I mean, those were professionals that, you know, that were just peaches and cream to work with.
Right.
It was so great. And we had such a great time. It was exhausting. You know, when you film 16 hours a day. So, you know, at the time we were playing at a nightclub. So, you know, we're working pretty hard.
John would know about the filming, how long everything takes. He's actually a movie director, John is. And, John,
I noticed that you did a couple of movie soundtracks, so you did some sound effects for A Real Nightmare and a couple of other movies that you either edited or you were involved in. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked me about that, John. I don't know where you found that, but
John's a genius. He's a genius.
I've done a few movies. I've done the musical scores, orchestra musical scores. I love all of music, and I love symphony music and classical music. So I incorporated this in some of the films I did. None of them were big movies. In fact, I didn't think half of them got released, but they're fun doing, and I still toy in that. You know, when somebody comes to me with a low budget film and they want a big sounding orchestra, they come to me, and I do it here. I have all the orchestra sounds on samples, and I work strictly through my computer and the keyboard, and they end up with an orchestra score for a lot less than they would pay to have John Williams conduct.
right. What is your favorite keyboard? I like the Korg. What do you like?
Oh God, we're never getting into keyboards. You know, I got
your baby. What's your baby? Put it that way.
Well, my baby right now is an old. I got it sitting right in front of me. It's a Motif, Yamaha Yamaha Motif XS6. They make
nice.
6, 7, and 8, which is the 88 keys. I have just a 6 here, and I've used that actually on a lot of concerts. It's
cool.
Neat because it has internal sounds, plus you can program sounds in it. And I've got and here's where I get into trouble. I've got all of the Vox sounds programmed into it because, I get a lot of people that like the Standells. They worship Vox, anything Vox, Vox Continental. It's like the god of keyboards. But they were really, they're really shitty. They were cheaply made. Mm. And the only reason we played them, and I include myself, Paul Revere, anybody that played those things knows that they were not very well built. And they would break down all the time. And, anybody that plays them today, they have to have their head examined. I'm going to get shot for this from fans, but usually speaking that, somebody that has one today, they've got to have about, 3 or 4 of them, just
to get the one sound that they really
want. They get the one sound. I mean, we did a concert in 1999 where they insisted I play Vox, and I went through 3 of them. And each one broke down. We finally ended up with a DX7 sitting on top of the box and playing that. And everybody thought I was playing the box.
Wow. Have you ever used the Farfisa, Len?
In
any of your songs?
Yeah, Farfisa was...
not the new ones.
Well,
I'm talking about the ones in the
60s. Yeah. In the earlier
specific,
songs. Not,
yeah, because they have a specific sound.
Yeah. In the earlier songs, like when we did the Bing Crosby show, I used the Farfisa in that. And,
they weighed a ton. They weighed
and,
a ton.
They did. And it's funny. They came out, before the Vox here.
That's the only
portable organ you could get. And about right when they came off the ship, as well as the box when it came off the ship. But they were. I used it also in the soundtrack. We did a thing with Jay North in it, who I met just like a couple of years ago.
Oh, Dennis the Menace.
Yeah. Oh, but cool. It was the movie. I can't think of the name of it. My head has gone blank. I'll come up with it.
I'll tell you a story.
it was all about zoo animals and they escape in this town. It was a huge comedy, and we did the theme song for it. And I used the Farfisa in that.
I sang it.
And interesting story about that song too is that. It was written as a jazz song, and they wanted us to do it. And I said, we don't do jazz, I'm not a jazz singer. Get Bing Crosby or somebody. They said, well, go ahead, rewrite it. So I did. I rewrote it, but didn't get any writer credit for it. But that's the time I used the Farfisa.
It's got such a distinct sound. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe if nobody knows what a Farfisa is, I believe Question Mark and the Mysteries used it in 96 Tears, right?
You would have to talk to Q, who's a friend of mine, by the way. But I'm not sure what they used. That organ part carried the whole song in that.
And
they did have a distinctive sound. There's no question about it. And they did. They are part of the history of music. They should be put up in some kind of altar or something. The Vox Continental and the Farfisa right beside it in the Rock Hall of Fame because they had such a distinctive sound.
The Smithsonian.
There you go, Smithsonian.
Yeah. Hey, if you don't mind, listen, if anybody wants to give us a call and talk to Larry Tamlin of the Standells, please call us at 646-478-0999. I'd like to continue on the naming of the band, the Standells. I love the story behind this. Why don't you tell us a little story?
Well, I wrote in my book, I came clean on it. Actually, the story is not quite true.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, no.
I'm not. You know, I saw the name on the Standale amplifiers.
Oh.
It was called Standel. And, you know, for lack of, a better reason, I said, we were looking for a name at that time. There was just the original members of the Standels, which was Tony Valentino, Jody Rich, Benny Hernandez, who's a big, he went by Benny King back then. And, he was a Facebook friend. And so we went with that name. And later it was on the, years later, I was on the, we did the Dick Clark American Bandstand.
Yeah.
And we were asked on the spot how we got the name.
Oh,
and
that's
so,
how you came up with it.
Yeah. And so I came up with, just standing around. That's how we got it. And then it went from there to, standing around booking agents' office, which
right.
we did. I mean,
right.
we did it. We spent a lot of hours standing around booking agents' office. Right. So all seemed, to fit. But, that's the story that everybody stuck with.
Right.
I
knew.
Yeah, and... Yeah, and recently, the one ex-member has said, well, Larry's been lying all these years. No, we've all been using the same story.
Exactly.
And he used it many times. But anyway, it's just the way it is in rock and roll. Groups got their names from all sorts of places.
Exactly. I want to ask you, though, do you have some tour dates coming up, don't you?
Well, we're working on it right now. We're working on a tour to the end of the year. No specific dates, except I do have one October 5th, Laguna Woods Performing Arts Center.
In California?
I got a big concert there. Mm. And, what I'm doing mostly is, since I'm the only original one that's left and is
that
still
was my next
performing.
Question. I was going to ask you who's left.
Yeah, that's me. There's another guy, Tony, is still alive, and he performs as Tony Valentino of the Standells, but he doesn't sing lead, and I don't want to put him down because he tries his hardest, and
we don't need him. I'm only kidding.
We parted ways back in 2009. We had falling out. We're just not connected anymore.
Yeah, that's what happens with bands. People don't understand when you're in a band. I mean, it's like a family. It is your family. And then all of a sudden it's not. And once it's not, there goes the band. And, you got to move on. Especially when you have something good going like you do, So you got to keep going.
Well, that's so true. It's a family. I mean, you live and work with these guys. You tour with them. And they are like family. And,
right. And we all know we hate our family. We hate our family.
Well, it's a love hate.
Exactly.
It's a love hate situation. With Dick, with Gary, who I just love, he was always a friend, Gary Lane. I pay tribute to them every year. I put together a film of it's on the Standell's Facebook page, and I play it about the time of their deaths, and give tribute to them, and I will continue to do so. As long as I'm alive, it's just the way things go. I Tony left the group of his own choice, which was fine. He wanted back in, and we just didn't want him back.
Nope.
Hey, Joanne, we have a caller. We have a caller for Larry if you want to take a phone call.
Larry, would you like to speak to one of our fans?
You bet. I'd love to speak
excellent.
To fans.
Caller, you're
excellent.
On the air.
Hey guys,
hello,
it's Jennifer. How are you?
Oh, Jennifer.
Hey, hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Larry.
Jennifer.
Hi, Joanne.
How are you, Jennifer?
Jennifer's actually, she used to be on my old show. She was a, she's a loyal, loyal listener. Thank you for joining us on the new show, Jen.
Oh, no problem. I've been waiting for you guys to kickstart it off.
Oh, thank you for joining us. What would you like to say to Larry?
Well, I was going to ask him about the Munsters, but you guys beat me to it.
John B.
Well, I could actually talk for hours about the Munsters.
I'm going to tell you a story.
I've got some stories. You know,
Munster Rock.
It took them about 3 hours to put on that makeup, and it was such a beautiful green power to it that you couldn't see in black and white.
No, I was going to say, we didn't have it in color.
No, it was extraordinary.
That's what made it cooler.
I said it made it cooler
being in black and white.
Yeah, it kind of made it look like the old Frankenstein movies. I think that's why they did it. With Boris Karloff, I was a big fan of those stories. In fact, I was a big fan of the Munsters when we were called to do it. It was like I watched it every week, I was just blown away when we were asked to be on it because I was like a fan, you know, being on the show.
Me too. I can only imagine the feeling, you know, of, oh, my God, they're asking me to be on my favorite show, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that Herman was so great in that scene. And then the cat jumped off the lap like, meow.
I used to love watching
the Munsters.
You know, I got to say that one of the most difficult scenes was sitting there with this serious face and listening to this oddball poetry of Homer and Munster, you know, when he recited ibbity bibbity bobbity, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there with this very serious contemplative look on my face, and I'm just dying to crack up. It's really difficult to hold back, you know.
What an experience, though. What a great experience. That's part of history, that show, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, unbelievable. Unbelievable. So I thought you had you have a new website coming up and new merchandise. What kind of merch are you going to have?
Well, we're going to have T-shirts, tote bags, holiday ornaments. I mean, you name it, we'll have
it.
It's not ready yet. We don't look forward to, you know, to being, you know, about a few months away. And people will be able to go to the site, you know, shop for just about anything. And you'll have my mug on a mug even.
Great, mug on a mug. And you also want to do, you're in the process of doing a weekly podcast. What's that about, Larry?
We haven't settled on a theme or a hook yet, but it's in the works, and you know, it's another thing that will be coming along. You know, I have lots of fun whenever I talk, you know, when I'm in an interview like this, and so I do the same, you know, with any kind of a podcast I do. I'm sure whatever we do, it's going to be lots of very entertaining and lots of fun.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be excellent. I am sure it'll be excellent. And you've got so many fans. I mean, I can only imagine you're going to be blowing up the internet, I'm sure.
Hey,
yeah,
Joanne, does Larry have time to take another call?
Oh, Larry, you want to speak to another guest?
You bet. You
excellent.
Bet.
Okay.
Got a lot of fans.
All right, caller, you are
there.
On the air.
Hello?
Hello, caller. Hello.
Hi, my name
Hi,
is
who's
Ramona.
Calling? Hi, Ramona. How are you?
My
where
name
you
is Ramona.
From? Yeah, where are you calling from?
Westfield, Massachusetts.
Uh-oh. Boston in the house.
Ramona, how are you?
Hi, Larry. How are you? You're the man.
Let's see. Do I know you on Facebook?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I'm
right.
on your Facebook.
Uh-oh.
I call you the Larry the Man. I call you Larry the Man. And I know, I don't know if she wants me to, you know, mention her name. I know Amy, and I know that, you know, you're connected with her. But I see all this stuff that you're talking about is on your Facebook, and you, as you go all through. And that, now I found you were with Marlo Thomas on Ben Casey.
Mhm.
Cool.
Yeah, we did a we did a lot of stuff with the you know TV shows.
Yeah.
I talked about that earlier. Ben Casey, that was typecasting. We played a. A bar band, and that's what we're doing back then. And,
right, and that's what
you
have on your site.
Yeah. If you notice, you know, I also said on my site that they that I don't think they like keyboardists very much because
yeah,
I was kind of buried in it.
Yeah,
you know?
I saw that.
The
and
guitarist,
You have to stand up and play, Larry.
Yeah, as well as
you
the
have
drummer,
to stand up
but
and play.
Yeah.
You know, it's odd because I did some shows like Shiver, remember that? And where I sang lead on it, and they didn't have one close-up shot of me. It was all of Tony and Dick, and there wasn't one close-up shot, so you couldn't tell who was singing the lead.
And you're the lead singer. How crazy is that?
Yeah, well, that's
and of course,
just the way it goes.
The dancers
nice.
You had.
The what?
You had those dancers.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the go-go dancers, they were all part of it.
I wore
dancers.
The boots, the mini skirt, the whole works and that, so I was into Dirty Water. I mean, that song, I just...
With the fringes on it. With the fringes on it and all that.
Yeah.
I love, I mean, that's all part of it, you know, the go-go dancers. And every so often we'll do a concert where they have go-go dancers, and most of them are really good, and they've really kept up with the steps, too, you know, doing the pony and
all
those old dances. That's all part of it.
The shindig, that was, oh God, they were all over shindig.
Yeah, we were on a couple of shows on shindig early before we had Dirty Water doing other people's songs.
Well, you
and,
had so many other songs too that other than Dirty Water. I mean, you were a solo artist before even getting into the Standells or starting.
Yeah, I mean, I started doing. I was almost born with a, you know, guitar in my hand. I started out with a guitar, and I had my own rock group together when I was, you know, 15 years old. And, but I started doing. I was discovered as a single artist and signed by Eddie Davis, Feral Records, and I had a number of songs. And you'll enjoy this. One of them was number one in Philadelphia.
Oh.
Yeah, it was called "This Is the Night," and it was kind of a doo-wop song. And it also was big in a lot of markets throughout the United States, and it's considered a kind of a doo-wop classic. And
cool.
A lot of us had those originations, know, in doo-wop. It all kind of goes back into one single place and then branches out.
Philly.
It starts, you know, with the originations of folk songs and gospel and,
now you're speaking Elvis to me.
Yeah. I mean, it all has its originations back then, back there, and it branches off. You know, a lot of these people were big in gospel, like Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
She was, you know, that's her background. That's kind of the roots of all this music that came out. And doo-wop was originally, of course, it wasn't called doo-wop back then.
It
was one branch of it.
Yeah, street corner serenades.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. A lot of those groups did exactly that. You stand out on street corners
Great time.
It got discovered. Yeah, it got discovered.
I wish so much that I was born during that era, 50s, 60s. You know, I mean, I was born in the 60s. I just wish I was.
Yeah.
Alive to enjoy it, you know?
Yeah.
When I was
about 15, my brother was running his beach house out to Elvis Presley.
Cool.
And it said how it got around in the middle school. I think my best friend squealed on me. And I had all these propositions from these young girls.
Yeah, of course.
None of us knew back then what that was.
Right.
But, we kind of had an idea, but
right.
You know, they were trying everything to get a hold of this number.
Sure.
I would not rat on Elvis. I actually got to talk to him for a few lines. Russ was talking with him on the phone and
nice.
Put me on with Elvis, and he says, "Hi, Larry." And I said, "Well, who?" I said, "Who's this?" "This is your buddy, Elvis."
Nice.
So that was one of the thrills of my life.
Excellent. Yeah, that would have been a big thrill for me too as well. Oh my God, I can only imagine. But this is a wonderful thrill to have you on our show as well. I mean,
Ramona, you kind of got lost there. Any other thing you wanted to ask?
Well,
Did we lose Ramona, John?
We lost her.
Oh, I guess.
So sorry, I get carried away like that. You know, somebody needs to smack me, you know.
Well, you know, you sit down, you say, "I'm going to tell you a story." So, you know. But all your stories are fantastic. I love it. We're having
and
a
you
wonderful
know,
show.
That's right. And sometimes you guys don't wear white, too. You know that. So,
yes.
I'm not wearing white today.
Oh, okay. Well, thank God.
Larry.
I do have to say, yeah, okay. Who's calling?
Hey, Larry, I wanted to ask you a question. It's John. How was it back then trying to get on the radio or to make a record? Because nowadays everything's done by the Internet. Back then, I guess you had to have an agent or someone who knew somebody or a record store. What was the process that you had to go through to break through?
Yeah, how'd you get your first song on the radio?
That's a really good question, and you know,
I agree.
First of all, you know, back then you didn't have internet, and you didn't have any of the shortcuts that people try to take today. You actually had to get out and had to work for it, right?
Exactly.
And go out and do freebie concerts and record hops.
Yeah,
so that you get your name known, like I did when I was a kid. And with the Standells, you know, we got a reputation. We played in nightclubs for a good 3 years before we had a record. And I want to tell you, we played in some dives. You know, our first gig was I talked about in my book, was in Hawaii, which was great. It's like paradise for me. You know, I was 18 years old, my first time away from home. And
Oasis Club or
yeah.
Is
that
in LA?
That was the Oasis Club, and we performed. They had an Asian floor show that we alternated with, and it was a complete burlesque show. And we came on right after the stripper. That is a tough spot to follow.
And you were a kid yourself. You were what?
Yeah, and I was a kid. And I admit it that I ended up having an affair with the stripper.
You and everybody else.
Well, you know, you don't think about those things when you're at that age, you know.
No, of course. Back then, you were. No. No.
Yeah, but she was actually a very sweet woman, you know, and I, as well as a lot of the chorus girls on the show, you know, some I maintained friendships with for quite a while. And but we went from Hawaii, which is a great gig, and we were booked in Fresno.
Mm.
Now, Fresno, I mean, it's like going from the beach into a nice, from sunny, you know, beach weather into a pot of boiling oil,
Only
thing I can think of. It's just a wretched experience. It was during their foggy season, and we played, if that wasn't depressing enough, we played this little we played in this little club near the railroad tracks, and so you could constantly hear trains going by. And
great.
But they were trying to build up their clientele, which was nothing. And you know, we doubled the crowd, which is about six people a night. One evening, six people total.
Oh,
and one night, this heavy woman, he must have weighed at least 350 pounds or so.
Oh, God.
She was drunk and she passed out, and she happened to pass out on the stage. And we couldn't move her, nor could anybody else. So we had to spend the remainder of the night
playing around her. Oh, my God. That's what I'm picturing. You got a beached whale on a stage, and here you are just playing away. Oh, my God.
Well, that's a really funny memory. And
that's hysterical.
That's in my book. But I'm telling you, you know, it's not all roses. Anybody back then. I'm talking about the Beatles.
Right.
You know,
it wasn't an easy road, yeah.
YouTube, they all played in clubs years before they were ever hits. And nowadays, they practically assemble these groups, and a lot of them don't even know each other, and they have I can't believe it. You know, they haven't developed the friendships, so they don't play together. They're here today and gone tomorrow. It's so sad, but there's no outlet for them either. So, getting back to your question, John, we were discovered playing in the Peppermint West, which is an offshoot of the Peppermint Lounge in New York, Peppermint West, and we were playing there nightly, and that's where we were discovered by a man named Bert Jacobs, who became our manager. Bert, we didn't know, but he was a bookie. That was his experience, and so he claimed, you know, how he signed us was, he says, if I can get you guys on a record label, will you sign with me? And we said, shit, yeah.
Of course.
And so he got us on Liberty Records right off the bat. But the reason how he got us on there as part of the story is that he took bets from a lot of these guys, and they were into him for money. As odd as it sounds, Bert was a wonderful person. He loved the Standells, and he was largely responsible for our success. He never broke any legs that I know about.
He didn't have to, right? That you know of.
That I know of. But I'll tell you one thing. We were in his office one day, and this was there was this very kindly gentleman. It was just so nice, and it was like a grandfatherly type, and talked to him for a while, and just so easy to talk with. Come to find out, he was like the godfather of the West Coast.
Oh, my God. And you're not exactly Italian, are you?
No. We didn't have one Italian member.
Exactly.
And a Sicilian is that, where the mob came. So
he's a real deal.
Kind of spoke their language. And in fact, he didn't speak English very well. A lot of my book is devoted to Tony because, it was basically he and I in the beginning. But he spoke with this broken accent, and it never got better. You know, after 50 years, it's still the same. And a lot of jokes about it, a lot of fun times we had in the early days. And as you get older, you change, is what I can say. But I cover that, and I cover the thick accent that he had, and it's really fun.
Well, I can't wait to read it. You definitely got to let us know when it's being released so we can let people know.
I will get their hands on it.
And definitely call us back whenever you want to come back on and let people know what you're up to. And I know you guys are very close in the community, so if you have anybody that want to come on, let us know. I know we have Mark Dawson coming on the 10th from Grassroots.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. We did one show with him in Vegas. I don't know if he was with him at the time or not, but that was back in. That was back in the last show that Standells did, the original Standells did together, in 2009.
Right.
And that the Grassroots were on that also.
Cool. Very nice. I love all this stuff. So, you know, I know John does too. I mean, we're so into it. And we also want to have, you know, basically, you know, all the actors from the past too, like Butch Patrick, all of them, you know, we want to have everybody on. We want yesterday and today. So I think the problem is, you know what, Larry, I think the problem is people are so sick of the world today that they want to go back in time, you know? And
I agree with you.
And if we could take you there, we'll take you there. You know?
Yeah, I agree. A lot of people say that, you know, that I hear good old days quite a lot.
Oh, God.
But, you know, the way I look at it, Joanne, is today, right now, is the best days. And that's what I like to think of it.
Well, above ground is better than underground, right? So those are all good days. All those good days above ground. So, is there anything else you want? Larry, I'm so sorry. Where can people, you know, reach you, see what you're up to, your website, your Instagram?
Yeah. Our website is under development, standells-official.com, but that's under development right now. And, I mean, there is something up there, but it's not really accurate, up to date. And then we have the Standells Facebook page, which people can really be filled on in on, can go to and find out what we're up to. There's also Larry Tamblyn and the Standells Facebook group.
All right.
And that's growing by leaps and bounds. And that's fun because people actually get to post on there,
right.
You know, and
well, you and I
are
Facebook friends now, which I'm happy about. I'm thrilled.
Yeah, I've got I'm reaching the limit on my personal Facebook.
I'm glad I got in when I did.
Yeah. So I'm well, you would have got in. You know, there's no question.
You don't know. You didn't know me from Adam.
I just
I
pay a great deal of attention to the friend requests that I get. Like I just
me
had
too.
One
I'm
from I just had one from the United Saudi Emirate.
they're all over. I'm getting them like crazy.
From a very strange-looking gentleman.
I delete those. And I just recently, I just posted some on Facebook because I'm getting a ton of requests now because of the show. And it's like, I don't mind being your friend, but I don't have time to chat. It's like, hey, how you doing? You know, great. And I'm getting a lot of these soldiers from overseas who I'd love to talk to, but I'm so busy. And then the conversation turns into, I want to hold you. You're so cute.
Yeah.
And then, this guy today says to me, can I have your phone number so we could talk? And I'm like, absolutely not. It's like, you know, it's like,
I get those requests as well. I get people trying to phone me through Messenger, you know, and I have a time with that. But you know, that's what goes on, Joanne.
I mean, I love you. I love you all. Thank you so much for the request.
Yeah.
I'm flattered. Thank you. However, let's be a normal person. And then,
I have a woman Facebook friend that just said that the men were sending their photos of their
I got
their
a few
penises.
Of those too.
Yeah, and. And I'm saying, you need to report that to Facebook, you know.
I did. Yeah. I unfriend them right away. I block them right away.
Yeah.
And then I say harassment. I just say harassment.
Then I ended, and she got a kick out of it. It's just not what you got. It's what you do with what you got.
Well, you're so funny. Your posts are hysterical. I do love them. Oh, my goodness. John, do you have anything else you want to add?
Well, I got one more question. Larry, when you first started out, when you played in these clubs and everything, there was no monitors, there was no auto-tune, there was no other stuff that the people are using today. And how do you feel about the music, if you can call it music today, where they're actually stealing clips of other people's music and put it into their own songs, and there doesn't seem to be any originality anymore? What do you think?
Because they can't write music.
Yeah,
that's why.
And they've done that. They've actually done that with clips from some of our songs too.
I'm sure they have.
I'm deadly against it because that's theft, in my opinion. And
well, if they don't pay you, you don't get paid.
There's been so much theft in this business.
Now with the internet.
Yeah. Not only from rap artists, they're the small part of it, but these record companies that spring up all over the place and put out illegal recordings from in other countries. MCA Records has our entire catalog, and so anything goes through them as far as licensing or whatever. They've done a great job, by the way. And there's an organization called Artist Rights Performance Corporation. I want to get a plug in for them because they're a nonprofit organization that specializes in handling artists that get cheated out of royalties. So they're really good.
Wow.
And they got us a ton of money in the 80s for records that were released that were re-released and that we didn't get a cent on and we still get money today from it so there are wonderful organizations out there, so not everybody got screwed. But as far as music, doing orchestra scores, I do both. I do computer music, and then I still do rock music. But there's a big difference. Back then, you recorded it on three tracks on tape, and there's no redoing. You had to do it straight through and get it right. Nowadays, you can pick it up, bend it, and you can go in and tune the vocals auto-tune them.
There's no talent out there right now. I'm telling you, I feel bad. I know you've been to the East Coast, but there's a radio station, WPLJ 95.5. It's been on for, I think, 40 or 50 years, and they just went off the air. I have to say, I'm part of the reason why they went off the air, because I am a serious radio listener. I used to love to stay on top of what was new, but I can't listen to this shit. It's horrible.
Yeah, it's gone corporate too in a lot of ways. You have those big corporations like Clear Channel that own many of the stations, and they have they already have their playlist mapped out on all these stations, and there's just there's no life to them, no breath, and that's something that back in the old days you used to see. We used to visit so many small radio stations while on tour. Every so often we come across one guy that what they used to call, you'd know this term, John, they used to call a combo man. And he would have a first class radio telephone license. You'd have to be able to not only be the DJ, but to operate the transmitter. That's how small and tight budget they were.
Right.
But we used to run into these guys.
That's
up. They're...
That's
yeah,
right,
but you
right
got
on.
The you got the internet. it's changed over the years, and I'm still good friends with a few of them that were around back there. Rev Foster is a very good friend of mine. He was a huge disc jockey on KFWB, KRLA. He was a program director, and he's a Facebook friend. Right. And so I had some wonderful time with these people.
Yeah, you had a wonderful life.
Hey, Joanne, we're running out of time right now. We got a couple of seconds left. And I just want to thank Larry so much for being on with us. I really enjoyed talking with you. I love the stories, and we can't wait to read your book.
Right. Larry, we'd love to have you back. I mean, you let us know when you're doing something. Let us know. We're more than happy to post it on Facebook, put it up on our webpage, and, get you back on the air and let people know what's going on with you, because I surely want to know.
Oh, that sounds great. I'd love to do it again. And,
yeah, it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure. Thank
yeah,
you
so it's
much.
It's more like just more like talking with friends than anything else, and I like it.
Exactly.
That.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate
thank you
calling.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Thank you.
Yeah,
take
John.
Care, and it's been a wonderful pleasure. Thank you again. And
okay.
Thank you from Applause Radio Show and Larry Tamlin of the Standells, sponsored by KWV Wine. Join us on July 10th, 8 p.m. with Mark Dawson from the Grassroots. Larry, have a wonderful
evening.
Good night,
everybody.
Happy 4th of July.
Thank you.
And thank you. Take care, honey. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye. Thank you.
Okay, you got it. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.